Welcome to the Optimal Body Podcast. I'm Doc Jen.
And I'm Dr. Dom, and we are doctors of physical therapy, bringing you the body tips and physical therapy pearls of wisdom to help you begin to understand your body, relieve your pains and restrictions, and answer your questions.
Along with expert guests, our goal of the Optimal Body Podcast is really to help you discover what optimal means within your own body. Let's dive in. As we're going to talk into children's health, I think one thing that is often neglected is talking about the health of the feet. Now, we think that we're maybe giving a lot of help and support as a child ages by looking for good arch support and having, you know, the proper support of the feet. But truly, helping the feet is giving them the environment to do the work themselves from the earliest age to into adulthood. So, this is why I love Vivo barefoot shoes, and we talk about it all the time because now they are supporting anywhere from 1 year old to until you pass. Everyone can benefit from Vivo barefoot shoes because it's going to set the environment for your foot to be able to splay and rest the way that it naturally should without squishing in the toes, and allow the arch to be supported on its own by doing the work of the foot, not having external support to press into. And I know this can seem very foreign if you've been told you need support. I grew up knowing that if I'm looking for a shoe, I'm feeling the inside and I'm seeing if it has a good arch support. Like, this was what was drilled into me. But now I understand the value of having the foot find pronation and supination on its own so that the arch can build the proper strength that it needs without relying on something else. And that's how we make the foot stronger. And there was actually a study, I recently did a post on this, just seeing that the transverse metatarsal arch, this is what crosses right before the toes, this arch support makes up 40% of the stability needed longitudinally, meaning the arch that we typically think about, the regular arch along the foot, that support really comes from the spread of the toes and the ability and control and strength to be able to spread the toes. So if we're having that control and strength, but then stuffing it into shoes that aren't providing that support, it just doesn't make sense. We're not actually supporting the foot then. So if you have not yet, I just recommend going and getting some Vivo barefoot shoes. Use code TOB at checkout. You get 15% off. Make sure they're not already shoes that are previously discounted, but use code TOB at checkout and you're going to get 15% off of your Vivo barefoot shoes, something we highly recommend. And we love having Dante in them as well.
So Jen and I, being new parents ourselves, we are so excited for this next guest. Dr. Alana Rumel is a pediatric naturopathic doctor with a mission to teach moms how to safely be a doctor mom. She loves to teach moms how to transform their fear, panic, and overwhelm when their child gets sick into feeling calm, competent, confident, and well-equipped with the right tools to prevent illness and treat it wisely. For more information and to join over 1,000 Dr. Mom members, visit www.medschoolformoms.com. And she gave us a special discount code for our podcast audience only. If you use code OPTIMAL when you sign up, you'll get an extra discount. Dr. Alana is also the co-host of the popular podcast, The Dr. Mom Podcast, with almost 2 million downloads. She loves to help support and inspire moms around the world. Her intention is to empower moms with the knowledge so they are well-informed to make the best decisions for the health of themselves and their children. To learn more about her, follow her on Instagram at Dr. Alana Rumel, where she shares her journey as a mother and a doctor. There are so many good tidbits in here to start bringing down that fear and bringing back confidence into parents when it comes to taking care of the wellness of their child.
Well, Dr. Alana, we're just so grateful to have you and have you take time to talk with us. There, I've definitely gleaned a lot of information from your page on Instagram alone and your free guides. I've definitely used them for my little guy. So I just really appreciate the information, the education, and I know you have an incredible community where you're continuing to educate moms. So thank you for all you're doing.
Oh, thank you for having me. I absolutely love hearing that feedback. If I can just continue to educate for free all day long, I would probably still be happy. You know, this is like my mission and my goal. So thank you.
I love it. And it really comes through in the content that you put out. And I mean, as Jen and I are on the doorstep of having our little guy make it to 13 months. I mean, you just really don't understand what this world of parenthood is like until you're in it, until you're in the thick of it, until you have your kid and start being told all of these things that you need to do to them medically or you need to have done with them. And it can just really be overwhelming. So I think that having somebody like you, a trusted source that you can follow to help dice through this a little bit, is so valuable. And I just want to start really by asking, what made you so passionate about this area and made you decide to go into naturopathic pediatric medicine?
So I always love to be a guest on others' podcasts because I get to revisit my why. I love this question. I ask all of my guests on my podcast as well. And I think it's such an important question for the work that we do and just for obviously your listeners to get to know me. So I'm happy to share. I'll try to keep it short because it's a good answer. So I'm a naturopathic doctor and I very mindfully chose this path. And what a naturopathic doctor is someone who can integrate both conventional medicine with natural therapies. I wanted to know all of the different options. And this all started spurring my interest when I was a very young child. I had a brother who suddenly died of asthma. This is not a common occurrence. It's rare. So if a listener is listening with a child with asthma, please do not be all that concerned. My brother had head-to-toe eczema starting at 6 weeks. He had multiple food anaphylactic shock reactions. He had multiple ear infections. He was a very sick child. And he was on all of the conventional medicines. And I just thought as a child, gosh, why aren't these medicines helping my brother? Why isn't he getting better? What's happening here? And when he did pass away at the age of 7, I was only 9 years old. It obviously rocked all of our worlds. It wasn't just me being a sibling, seeing my brother pass away, but it was also me witnessing my parents just completely fall apart. And now as parents yourselves, you can really understand and imagine how hard and how it's just a lifetime of grieving. And how it occurred to me was twofold. One was I felt like there had to be other options. How could conventional medicine just fail my brother? But the more actually striking thing that happened to me was I witnessed my parents go from very calm and collected individuals to very anxious and overly protective of us existing children. We left with three other girls. So there was four of us in my family, three girls and the one boy who passed. So there was a big impact on me seeing my parents very anxious and very anxious from the littlest bit of a fever or a cough or a common cold that one of us girls would have gotten. Kind of feeling like there was so much unnecessary worry going on with them, but understandably so, because this is how they were just trying to grieve and adapt to the loss of their child. Mm-hmm. So then as I grew up and as I decided to go into whatever career I wanted to choose, I knew that I wanted to help kids because I had such a soft space in my heart for kids in medicine. I wanted to offer multiple options so that parents felt like they had full informed in consent and that they knew what they could do for their little ones. But most importantly, what I realized as I started practicing medicine is I gravitated towards the most anxious parents, towards the parents who just would worry unnecessarily. They would come into my office with maybe a child with a common cold, but they were panicking and they were overwhelmed with what was going on. And I just had such a special place in my heart for these parents. And so years of practicing, I was practicing for 10 years at that point, I just saw so many parents feeling overwhelmed and confused that I realized I needed to share my knowledge with them, what I learned in medical school, how I would go about even now having my own children, feeling calm and collected and confident about how to go about helping their kids from home. And it just soared. You know, I saw moms just, and dads, and so I shouldn't just exclude dads. I apologize for that. I'm so used to so many moms coming to me and asking for help, but moms and dads wanting to put on their Dr. Mom or Dr. Hat on and really help their kids from home using natural medicine, but also appreciating when conventional medicine is warranted and just integrating the two. And so that's where I just decided to go online and just share all my protocols and all my wisdom and all the years of training that I have. And I'm so happy to be able to do it because whether I'm saving a child's life or I'm just helping parents feel less anxious about their child being sick, to me, that is such a win. And we're moving in the right direction of helping parents feel more empowered and feel like they can really help their child with their own tools at home.
Wow, that's such a powerful story and gave me so many chills as you were going through, because definitely being a parent myself, relating to what your parents had to go through and what you have seen growing up, it's unbelievable. So I just greatly appreciate, you know, taking that story, taking that journey and turning it into what you have. And definitely there could be a lot of anxiety even, you know, without losing a child, and just the overwhelm of information that you get too, even from your pediatrician. Sometimes there's, you know, information we get and we question, well, you know, is, can I do a little bit more research into this? And what do I think? What is best? And it could be really difficult and overwhelming. So I just want to talk about a couple of those points and at least touch on a few things that might help mitigate some of those stressors. And one of the top ones being, you know, fevers. And when is that really a concern? And when is it something that the body is just naturally kind of working through, when we should let it do its thing? When do we intervene? When do we give Tylenol? Like, what are some of like the highlights of fevers?
Great. I love this question because, again, it's such an anxiety provoking topic. So there is something called fever phobia. This is a term that has been designated to illustrate the amount of fear and phobia associated with fever. So this is a very, very common concern, which is why I have that free fever protocol guide. I decided just to give the entire protocol away because I wanted parents to not feel so anxious. So let's just go back to the basics. Why do fevers happen in the first place? So the fever happens when the body's exposed to, whether it's a virus, a bacteria, something that the body looks as foreign, okay, and it doesn't like. The beautiful thing about the body is that it raises its internal temperature, because these kind of bugs don't like to live in this type of environment. It doesn't survive in hot temperatures. What a beautiful thing that the body does in order to help eradicate something that the body doesn't want. Now, as the temperature rises, there's different inflammatory molecules that come out, cytokines, TNF-alpha, all this great stuff that the body's just like giving an alarm saying, okay, we've got to now grab our immune systems, all those soldiers, all those great things to just try to help eradicate that bug or that virus. So that's a great thing. And we want to harness the body's natural ability to help fight infection. Now, the issue is that some kiddos don't like to feel overheated, right? They feel uncomfortable. They feel lethargic. They don't like being too hot. And so this is where, as us as parents, we just kind of need to observe our children. Is the fever alone the thing that's scaring us, or is it the discomfort of the child that's scaring us? And this is where we just get to navigate and start picking this apart. And so I'm going to help you do that right now. But before we go into that, what I do want to just mention, and I want to be very clear, is that the number of the temperature, the degrees or the Celsius, the Fahrenheit or the Celsius, whatever the degrees is, that's not what should be the most alarming to parents. And that's a very big confusion, because I oftentimes hear from parents, but it's 102, it's 103, I'm so worried. That number alone doesn't make me concerned. What I'm more concerned about, and what I teach my parents to be concerned about, is what I call the accompanying symptoms. Is there a fever with ear pain? Is it a fever with stomach pain? Is it a fever with a sore throat? What is accompanying the fever that I'm actually more concerned with? And that's what I kind of go down the avenue with. Okay, how alarmed should I be with this? So if it's just a fever alone with no other symptoms and the child is doing okay, there is no reason to be concerned. There's an article by the Seattle Children's Hospital I love. It's like myths versus facts with fever. And one of the statements that they have here is that brain damage can only happen over 108 degrees Fahrenheit, 108.0, not 100.8, but 108.0 is the first signs that even any brain damage can happen. In my clinical experience, I've never even had a kid even close to that. I think the highest was 106 that I've seen. So I just want to give that as like maybe like a big, just deep breath of fresh air, and just to know that the temperature alone is not what we worry about. It's really the accompanying symptoms. Now, with that said, the one time that I will say that I care about any type of temperature and a fever in a child less than 2 months, if you have a newborn and it's a child less than 2 months and there's a fever, which is considered 100.4 degrees Fahrenheit or above, so 100.4 and above, that's when it warrants a visit to a doctor or a call to the doctor or to urgent care. In an infant that age, we do not want to see any type of fever. But if your child's above the age of 2 months with a fever, that doesn't warrant any visit unless that there's accompanying symptoms that may warrant it. Is that clear? I just want to make sure that I was very specific about that.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Definitely.
Okay, great. So when it comes to accompanying symptoms, depending on the severity, that would then warrant a visit. So if it's severe ear pain that just won't go away, you may want to get that ear looked at. Severe throat pain, you may want to get a strep test, right? A throat culture. If it's stiff neck accompanying with a fever, then yes, you would want to go and rule out something like meningitis. But these are not common symptoms. You know, it's mostly the discomfort from the fever that gives parents a little bit more of a paranoia or a worry. And if it's a discomfort, that's when I say, you guys, go to all the natural medicines, go to the tools, go to either homeopathy. There's cold, wet socks. There's herbal medicine. There's nutrient therapy. There's so many different things that we can do to help just provide some comfort to our child. And if that doesn't provide the comfort, it's never a harm to just give Tylenol here and there or ibuprofen here and there. But it's not something that I would like to see ongoing because there could be some side effects to that. And so I just like to always, always give options to parents to know that there's natural medicines that can come first.
I think that's a fantastic answer. And one of my favorite parts about it, it kind of reminded me of how you started, kind of reminded me of how Jen and I will educate people about pain sometimes. You talk about the fever that the body creates is such a beautiful and magnificent process when it comes down to the physiology of it. It's this protective mechanism that is actually helping us protect the body from these foreign, you know, invaders, whether they're viruses. And similarly, we talk about pain that way as this messaging system that's telling us that we should do something different or telling us that we need to change something, we need to avoid something. And so at the end there, you mentioned different homeopathic methods, you know, versus ibuprofen, Tylenol. And when those may be appropriate. I know you have a full guide, and hopefully we can maybe get a link to that to put it down in the show notes of the episode if people are interested as they listen. But can you give us some of just the initial go-tos if we're not noticing a lot of those accompanying symptoms that you mentioned and just want to address, you know, bringing that fever down or getting it back to normal? What would be some of the initial go-tos that you would recommend to parents, you know, and when may ibuprofen or Tylenol be something that you would say, okay, now seems like an appropriate time to use this?
Great. And I do. I love how you guys teach about pain being a signal to the body that something underlying is an issue. And if we just need to correct it, that's when the pain goes away. I fully believe that our bodies give us so much information and that symptoms are just guides to help us uncover what are some of the root causes of some ailments. A fever is just the body saying, hey, guess what? There's a foreign invader. Something's going on. So what can I do to help fight this? I love really tuning into the wisdom of the body and not suppressing it. And this is where even some natural medicines, the goal is not to suppress the fever so much where then the body can't actually help find that homeostasis, that balance, right? So we want to lower the temperature enough to provide comfort for the child. But we don't want to lower it so much that there's no more fever because then the body doesn't have those symptoms to help heal the body, okay? So when we talk about natural medicines, the goal of that is solely providing comfort, boosting immune production, right? So we can help speed the healing with the goal of just shortening the duration of the illness and decreasing the intensity of the symptoms. I don't want it to be the measure of getting rid of the fever completely. That would not actually be the goal. Although Tylenol and ibuprofen would do a very quick job at that. My concern is that then it doesn't actually really help harness the body and what the body really does, which in my mind is a beautiful way of speeding healing. So The natural medicines that I absolutely love, especially for kids under 6 months, is homeopathy. Homeopathy are these tiny little vials you can find in health food stores. They're little pellets that you could put directly inside the child's mouth. And the reason why these are so safe for children under 6 months is because they have very, very low amounts of the actual remedy. It's usually a plant or type of mineral or whatnot. It's I put it in the category more of like an energetic medicine, just like I do acupuncture. Acupuncture is just little needles in the body that are kind of stimulating the body to heal. Lots of great evidence, lots of great studies to show its effectiveness. So is homeopathy. Instead of putting needles in the body, you just choose the homeopathic remedy that helps to stimulate the body to heal. You give that remedy. Children are incredibly resilient to these, and it helps on an energetic level. And not all herbal medicines or health food supplements are safe for kiddos less than 6 months, which is why I love having this tool of homeopathy. Two of my favorite homeopathic remedies for fevers are called belladonna and aconitum. And these are indicated for sudden fevers that come on, could be in the middle of the night, high fevers. The child is just so distraught. They're very, you know, they're crying, they're red in the face. They're just very inconsolable, uncomfortable. And it's something so simple to just be able to put these little pellets inside the child's mouth and just observe and wait and see if the body can heal and just help bring comfort to the body. So those are my two favorites when it comes to infants under 6 months. When the infant gets a little bit older, so 6 months and above, we can start implementing something called herbal medicine. These are just plant medicines. One of my favorites for fevers in particular is a plant called lemon balm. And lemon balm is so calming to the nervous system. It helps to support the nervous system during this heightened time, okay? And it also helps as an antiviral. So more times than not, it's a virus that's stimulating a fever. 8 out of 10 children, common pediatric concerns are viral-related, not bacterial, although there are some bacterial-related illnesses, of course. But as an antiviral, it's so nice because it helps to stimulate the immune system. It helps to bring, support the nervous system, and then that can help cool and calm the body. So that's a beautiful herb that we use for fever. And then there's home remedies that really any age can use. But one thing that I feel like has gotten a lot of traction on social media, and I'm so happy it has because it's such a great therapy, are what we called cold, wet socks. And this is where you could just take a pair of wool socks and a pair of cotton socks. And what we do is we actually really, truly provide the body with an ability to help heal from the inside by moving the blood and moving the lymph. And so the way that we go about this is we would take cotton socks, you submerge them in either ice cold water, or for very young infants, I just do cold water just from the faucet. I wring them out. I put them on warm feet. So you don't want the feet to be too cold. You could put the feet, if they're cold, in like a nice little warm bath, or if the feet are warm already, you don't need to do anything with them. But you take these cold, wet socks, you put them on the warm feet. You then take wool socks, and you put those over the cold, wet socks, those cotton wet socks, and you put the kid to sleep. And what that's doing is during sleep is that it's moving lymph and blood flow from the feet, and it's pushing it up, and then it's going from the legs to the head, and then the head down back to the legs. It's increasing those immune cells in the body because our bodies don't want to stay cold very long. So our bodies are going to push blood, push lymph to try to warm up those cold socks. And it's this beautiful movement of blood and lymph throughout the body all night long. And that's what's going to help decrease the fever because we're bringing out all these immune cells and building lymph and blood. And it's this like really old time, old school therapy that is just incredible for fevers, but not only fevers. It can help with coughs, respiratory disorders, or congestion, headaches. It's a really great therapy that I feel like is kind of getting back to popularity. And I love teaching about that. And I would say this is probably safe for kiddos, maybe over 3 months or 4 months of age. And then as they get older, absolutely go ahead and you could start this. Even for us adults, it's a great therapy. You guys probably would geek out on it because you guys are such movement people, but you can imagine being able to just lie there and have your body work for you.
Yeah, it's funny. I actually had been told to do this like a few years ago from one of our friends who was a naturopathic doctor. Yourself. And when I heard you talking about it, I was like, oh yeah, let's do this for Dante. I've done it for myself.
I suppose the physiology works the same. And I it's funny, coming into this interview, I was totally going to ask about that because I figured my mind had kind of put together it had something to do with circulation. But that totally makes sense. It seems similar to the pneumatic type boots where the purpose is just get the circulation moving and that allows the body to do its magic.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I did want to ask just real quick too, like, is there any concern when a fever starts to go high quick? You know, I've heard, especially after some common vaccines, you know, there's a fear of febrile seizures. And is there any fear with, like, I guess the anxiety of, like, seeing the number start to rise? Could that be a concern that we're looking at, or not usually?
Great. So I'm so happy you asked about this. Febrile seizures definitely happen. They're very scary. They're very worrisome. So I really understand. And if a parent is listening who has had one or observed one in the past, I understand then that's where the fear really comes into place. So a few things about that. Febrile seizures occur when there's a rapid change of temperature. So it's not about the degree or how high the temperature is. It's how fast it goes from, let's say, 0 to 100, okay? Now, unfortunately, it's very hard to catch that because for one child, going from 100.4 to 101 rapidly could trigger that febrile seizure. For another child, it could be going from 102 to 103. So it doesn't actually matter, again, the degree. It depends on, again, that child's susceptibility to how they react to this, the quick change. And unfortunately, we can't always catch that so soon, right? Or in that moment. What I do tell my parents who have that history of febrile seizures is this is the perfect time to really try to hone in on a particular homeopathic remedy that the earliest signs of any type of illness that may come on, that you go ahead and support your child with that homeopathic. And it will take some time and some experimentation to find that one that oftentimes that child will react to. I brought up the homeopathic belladonna or aconitum. These are just two of many fever remedies that could be indicated for your child. And what I love about homeopathy specifically is that you really have to be very specific to the individual symptoms. So how one child presents with a fever could look very different to the other child. For example, you may have a child that their fever comes on suddenly. It goes very high, fast, and it always comes in the middle of the night. Where you may have another child whose fever is usually low grade. It actually happens just right before bed, and it doesn't really cause that much concern. Those are two different presentations, and those would warrant two different types of homeopathic remedies. Now, that's a little bit more work for a parent to have to then navigate. But once you start observing your child and understanding how they uniquely present, you usually can find that homeopathic remedy that will then just do wonders. And what I love about homeopathy is not only safe, but it works really quickly. So you will know within minutes if that child is going to react to that remedy. Mm. With that said, if your child's susceptible to febrile seizures, you will then have that remedy knowingly on hand. And the earliest signs of symptoms, you want to go ahead and give it to them so you can kind of catch it before that change in degrees, the change of the escalating temperature changes, you can catch it then. Mm-hmm. Now, with that said, if that gives you peace of mind to give Tylenol preemptively, that is going to be something that you have to tune in really to know if that's going to help you. The literature states that there's actually no change or prevention in febrile seizures just to jump to Tylenol or ibuprofen. Mm-hmm. But if, again, that gives you peace of mind, that's going to be something that I think is very important. Mm-hmm. You asked when Tylenol or ibuprofen would be indicated. The only time I would say it would be indicated for fever specifically is in the middle of the night. If you're trying all your home remedies, nothing is working, your child's so uncomfortable, no one is sleeping in the house. To me, that would be a great time where you would then pull out the ibuprofen or the Tylenol and say, we need to all get some rest. We need to have something to reliably know that this child is just going to have some comfort, because we know that it does work. And there's the beauty, you know, there's a beauty of having those options. And again, doing it once in a blue moon is not going to pose a lot of harm. If I may just insert a little bit about Tylenol, when I do feel it's appropriate to say, please try to withdraw or abstain from using it, would be before or after giving a vaccine. And the reason there is that one of the things that Tylenol does is that it depletes our storage of what we call glutathione. And glutathione is a natural antioxidant that is made in the liver to help detoxify chemicals, you know, waste products, all of these things. And so because we know that that's what happens, it's just one of the side effects of Tylenol. When we're giving something like a vaccine that we know has some ingredients in it that could be harmful to the body, We want to help the detox capacity. We want to help our kids be able to clear any of those chemicals that we don't want to stay in the body. We want our glutathione levels to be at peak amounts. We want to make sure that our children can detox and we can also take that immune insult from the vaccine in an intelligible way, in a way that the body really has everything in its favor so that the vaccine does what it does and the body can help eliminate what it doesn't need. And by giving Tylenol before a vaccine or even shortly after a vaccine, it will increase the potential of an adverse reaction because the body's glutathione levels are not at its peak. So if we can just try to avoid Tylenol during those times, if you absolutely need it, I would then choose ibuprofen because we don't see the same glutathione levels being affected with ibuprofen. That would be my strong consideration in that situation.
I think those last two are such great takeaways, things that people are told a lot. I love the pointer you gave on if it's needed to get sleep, especially for the kid to get sleep. And I think that as you know, it's talked about often, sleep can be one of the greatest healers. So if you're, if your little one has a fever and is not getting sleep, that can only compound things because the body is just not going to be operating as normal or as it best could. We've covered fever a ton, and I know that you could probably fill hours more of lecture on discussion on fever. I want to move into something actually that I dealt with a lot when I was a young kid. You mentioned that your brother was dealing a ton with eczema, and I know that many parents and many little ones have skin issues, eczema, you know, patches of whatever it is, cradle cap or different different skin issues. What are some suggestions for parents who are dealing with skin issues, not sure what to put on it? They're being told to use this cream or that cream or cortisone, a Benadryl cream, whatever it is. What are some of the things that you recommend for people?
Wonderful. I love talking about eczema because it kind of goes a little bit of against conventional treatments. And so I love to give some like aha moments and some eye openers to some other options. So again, let's go back to there's a time and a place for a steroid cream, and I'm going to go into when that may be. But the biggest key takeaway I love to share with parents is that when you see something occurring on the skin, the best thing to do is focus your attention on internal healing. It's the same thing that we were talking about with pain in your community. When you talk about pain, it's a sign that something is off balance inside. When we correct it, the pain will go away. It's the exact same thing with skin reactions. When you start noticing something on the skin with your child, to me, I feel like this is like such a gift. It's the body telling us that something is off internally, and we have to kind of find that balance. What's off? What needs a little bit of refinement so that the skin would clear up? And now we have answers to this. So I think these are all great signs. And I think that I know it can cause a lot of concern and anxiety. I'm actually currently working through eczema with my baby here. She's 18 months as we're recording, where my other two children had no eczema flares. Mm. And so again, this gives me signs that something's going on in her body and I need to now be the investigator. So I love talking about this because this happens to so many children and there's nothing as a parent that you did wrong. Every child is unique. And every child, even if they have the same genetic makeup, which again, every child, even in your same family, will have different genetics, makeup slightly. But what we're doing in our environment that will help one may not help another. And that's the beauty of being unique. So let's first work on some nutritional things that I would love every child who has eczema to focus on. These kiddos, they have a more susceptibility of having low vitamin D levels, low zinc levels, low omega-3 levels, and also gut dysbiosis, which is what probiotics really help with. These four remedies are foundational support for any child who may present with eczema. And the beautiful thing about that is these four nutrients would be a great addition to someone's daily essential wellness plan. Some kids may need this more than others. Some kids can get away with only taking this kind of stuff a couple days a week or maybe once a week. The kids who have eczema, as parents, you just want to be a little bit more on top of these nutrients specifically because we know these kids are more prone to some of these deficiencies. So again, vitamin D, and I like to pair that with vitamin D and K2. They work very well together. zinc, omega-3s, which you can find in fish oils, and then probiotics. And more times than not, when a child's taking these nutrients, let's say for 2 to 3 months, you're going to see majority of eczema cases clear. And if you don't see eczema clear during that time, that's a sign that we need to dig a little bit deeper and that there could be other associated disorders that are going on. And the list goes on here. It could be leaky gut. It could be a toxic exposure, something like mold toxicity that we need to really look into. It could be a myriad of things. And this is when I would want you to talk to a functional medicine doctor, a naturopathic doctor, because this is where lab testing can really help us understand the root cause. But I'm hoping to give some peace of mind and some knowing that this is not necessarily a condition that will last a lifetime, but it is something that's going to give us information about a child's immune system, how their immune system is reacting to different things, and how we can best support them in their young years. So as they grow up into their adult life, we can actually help prevent some chronic diseases. So similar to my brother, if I would have had the tools that I would have known now, seeing how, I mean, he had angry, really angry eczema. If we could have gone to the root cause of what was going on, we probably could have prevented his recurrent ear infections, his asthma, and all this like later stage chronic disease. So I actually love working with that and giving this knowledge to parents that do not give up. If you're putting the steroid cream on, that is almost just a band-aid, because now we're not able to listen to the body, to see those symptoms, to work on different therapies to see what's working, what's not, so we can really understand and cure it. Conventional medicine wouldn't ever claim that you can cure eczema, but I would actually say otherwise. I do believe you can, but you got to go in internal and into the root cause. The other question you had was, when is it appropriate to use steroids? And I think that steroid creams are appropriate to use when there's so much scratching that wounds are now opening up and now we're having susceptibility to infections, which then would lead to an antibiotic prescription. Now, having these little kids now add antibiotics now can then have some disruption in their gut, and now this can lead to even more issues. So this is an absolute time that I would say, if you're seeing any potential for an infection, then that is a great time to use a topical steroid, as we are then working on the internal gut healing or internal healing that's needed.
That is so incredibly essential. Like, I love that you bring up, you know, really getting to the root cause, because even what I've seen with being married to Dom, you know, depending on what he's eating and how your diet is, then
I am the poster child for something like this, because I had asthma growing up. I had really bad skin stuff. And my father notably he's a traditional MD. He works in family medicine. And one of our jokes growing up was, whatever you have going on, rub triamcinolone on it or take some ibuprofen. Because that was, you know, the blanket answer. I don't even think he would mind me saying that, because we always joke with him now about it. But when I eat a certain way, I have patches of eczema or psoriatic type skin patches pop up on my body, and I know it all comes from internally and from what I eat.
Yeah. So it's so interesting and fascinating to see it. I guess it was hard, and they're changing so much, especially like 0 to 3 months. It's like there were so many different skin issues that would happen with Dante, and seeing different things. But it's interesting to say, okay, what am I having in my diet? And what am I, because if he's getting breast milk from me, then what is it that I'm delivering to him that could be causing different skin things? Are there creams in general that you can recommend to just moisturize the body, putting like lotion on, preventing dryness? Like, are there specific natural type creams that you recommend for babies?
Yes. And I do want to just add, if I may, there are a lot of what we call post-viral rashes that is very common. And that's actually not something that I would have any alarming feel to. This happens when a child is sick, maybe a cold, a cough. And then after they're sick, bam, a full body-wide rash, and it goes away in a couple of days. It doesn't bother them. It doesn't do anything. That is actually a very normal immune process. I wouldn't even put that in the category of, oh no, dig deeper. What's the root cause? The root cause is just that they had a viral infection and now they have a viral post-viral rash. So I want to also separate that from the topic of eczema, because that is very normal and very different and nothing to be concerned about. So I just wanted to put that as a little bit of a side note. Oh, and I should mention, because you said, Dante, 0 to 3 months. You know, even like something like baby acne, it could be very normal and that will go away. And there's nothing that is alarming or wrong. That's just the you know, the mother's hormones pass through to child. That will all go away on its own. It's really these type of rashes that are kind of more stubborn, where they're not going away.
Right.
Right. And they're more of these ongoing concerns. But for the most part, if a child has a rash and it goes away in a couple of days, that's great. Just let the body do its work. But if it's this ongoing, persistent complaint that either comes and goes and it just continues to recur or just never goes away, then we want to dig more deep. So let me just preface that. Okay, now as far as moisturizers go, we are so fortunate. I feel like we have so many amazing options these days. When I first started practicing medicine, there were so many few organic, gluten-free options or healthy sunscreens or healthy lotions or, you know, with a clean label. So I just want to mention there are so many different brands. I don't want to exclusively say one because there are so many, but the way that I would like parents to go about it is look on a website called Skin Deep. It's sponsored by their environmental working group. And what I love about it is that you can input any skincare product, be it lotion, sunscreen, even for us adults, makeup or body wash, all of this stuff. And they give ratings. And the lower the ratings, the less toxins are involved. And toxins can irritate the skin. It could be carcinogenic, which means that it has some cancer-promoting compounds. There's so many different things that we want to just try to avoid in our environment. And so when it comes to eczema-prone children, we want as clean ingredients as possible since they really react to like so many irritants. So there are so many different brands, so many different great moisturizer out there that now has these low toxin profiles. So yes, moisturizing is a very important part of the process, not over bathing the child because hot water, warm water can dry out the skin. Mm-hmm. We see eczema flares a lot in wintertime when the weather is more dry. But really what we're trying to do is build from the inside out a healthier skin barrier, because these kiddos, their barrier in their skin, it is very dry and they're not as healthy as what we want. But again, so much of that, yes, you could put a moisturizer on and those are helpful, but so much of the work starts from the inside out to get that skin barrier to be healthy, to be moisturized. A lot of that is those omega-3s, because those fatty acids are so integral in healthy skin and healthy cellular composition. So all of that is good, but again, just go to Skin Deep, look for moisturizers that are low levels, non-toxic, and you've got a whole long list to choose from.
Amazing. Yeah,
the Environmental Working Group is amazing, the work that they do, and we'll definitely link up Skin Deep down below. One last topic that I want to touch on before we let you go here. I don't think it's appropriate to have a talk about babies if we don't talk about poop, at least a little bit.
Great.
So Jen and I will often hear, and we have a lot of friends and family going through early stages of being parents right now, that, oh yeah, my kid just will go a week without pooping and then they'll just start pooping again. And like, almost like it's becoming this normal thing that your kid might go through a stage where they don't poop for a week or more, or
especially when they're young,
3 or 4 days. Yeah. Especially during stages when they're in their infancy or in their first year. Is that normal? Is there any concern if our kid, especially in the newborn or the first year, goes multiple days or a week without pooping?
Excellent question. I'm so happy to talk about this. So interestingly enough, as a naturopathic doctor, we really, really care about pooping, and we care about pooping daily. It is the number one thing we'll ask patients. It's very important to gauge overall health. Now, I was surprised that when I was doing my naturopathic medical school that when I was really studying for pediatrics, even my naturopathic doctor professors will say, in an infant less than 12 months, especially one who is breastfed, it is not abnormal to see 7 to 10 days of not pooping, and that could be okay and healthy as long as the child has no symptoms of discomfort or colic or reflux or any of that. If the child's happy and fine, continue on. So for the first number of years of my practice, that is what I believed. But I actually really questioned that. And it took a few years of doing more research and more studies came out and just, you know, more clinical practice to realize that I really changed my mind about that. I truly do believe that, you may not see a daily poop with an exclusively breastfed baby, but as you're getting into days 3 or 4 or 5, I would encourage helping to stimulate a good bowel movement, but also looking at, why is this child having such a delay? Again, remember, I'm really big into root cause, not just Band-Aid, but just root cause. Now, some kids have no problem while others have some issues. So I would say that if you see your child less than one who's exclusively breastfed have some susceptibility to not going daily, I would start looking into a good pre and or probiotic type of regimen for them, just to give some support to the body to understand what may be going on. If you want to take it another step further, you can always test their stools and see, you know, really get their gut profile and see what may be going on. But I do think that after days 3 or 4, we should start trying to help encourage that. The other thing is, again, if a child's on formula and showing signs of constipation, this is my indication that that formula may not be the best formula fit for that child, and we may want to switch to a different type of formula. Goat formula seems to be a much easier to digest. I see a lot of kids doing much better on it than cow-based formulas. So just keeping that in mind. And then as the child's older, so now we're talking about over one, we're doing a lot more solid foods. And especially around, I would actually like back up around 9 months when solid food intake is getting a little bit more frequent, right? 9 months, we're starting to see like 3 meals a day and maybe a couple snacks. If we're not serving enough water to a child, we're going to start seeing more constipation. So again, we sometimes forget, oh my gosh, our kid can have water, you know, like you go from breast milk or go from formula. But if your child's starting solid, you always want to then serve it with some water to really help move the bowels along as well. And then when we get into more toddler age, then I've got so many other protocols and so many other things that we could do for constipation. But yes, by that point, we definitely want to see one good solid bowel movement every day. It's a great sign of good health because we want our waste products out of our body. We don't want them to recirculate. And so that's such a big key for optimal gut health, for detox capacity, and so for overall health. So I absolutely love talking about poop. And it really does mean a lot to me. So we just have a little bit of support, and a little goes a long way, and the kids start pooping again.
That's great, great information. Because I always kind of question it as well. And luckily, we don't have to. I mean, he poops all the time.
Yeah. Is there a top end? Like, is there too much poop right. That can be happening? Because sometimes I wonder with this kid.
But you are an incredible wealth of information. I know we can keep talking for like hours, but I think that's where, you know, you provide an incredible Dr. Mom community where people can get involved, get these answers, get protocols, get real support to really feel empowered and less anxious about all of these things and all these questions. Like, we just tapped on some very top surface stuff, but there's so much more that I know, you know, parents want questions and answers to, and I know that you provide that. So where can people get involved?
Well, thank you. And I do love compiling it all because it really ends up being in the middle of the night where the concern ends up being in the middle of the night, and what are you going to do? And so what I love about this community and what I've provided is you can literally just open up your phone or open up your computer, and I have a list of all of my naturopathic protocols. And so I make it as simple as possible. I always offer for each condition 3 lifestyle changes, whether it's diet or home remedies that you could just do right away, and 3 of my top natural medicines for each condition. And we have dozens of conditions now. The library just continues to grow. Every month, I highlight a new condition. I often will invite an expert in the field worldwide, really now, a pediatric holistic provider to help us understand the condition. I'll interview them. So if you have the time and you want to dig deep, understand, let's say, hand, foot, mouth, or understand RSV, or understand the warning signs of asthma, all of these conditions that are just common that we see in our kiddos, so you can really feel like you can master it, okay? I want you to feel confident when to see the doctor or when you can help your kiddo from home. And I love just sharing. I want this accessible to everyone. I feel like seeing a naturopathic doctor can get very pricey. It was one of the things that when I would see patients, it never felt aligned for me. It was always like a conflict for me. And I want this information accessible to all. So my membership is a subscription base. You can cancel anytime. It's as low as $27 a month. It's even cheaper if you join quarterly. I have sales often too. So I love making this information accessible. You can go to the drmommembership.com, or I should say Dr. Mom Membership. So not the, we'll put the link here. Yeah. I also include vaccine information and education inside the membership. It's another thing that is probably one of the most anxiety provoking topics that I work with parents. And I never wanted to become the vaccine expert. It's not something that brings me necessarily joy. It's very complex. It's very controversial. But what brings me joy is seeing an anxious parent go from feeling overwhelmed, scared, and uninformed to someone feeling confident about their vaccine plan. And I support a parent who chooses to vaccinate and or who chooses no vaccines at all. I just want parents to feel informed and empowered. And so that's what I really love to do, that education. And I love seeing that transformation go from anxious to confident. So that's all in the Dr. Mom membership. I really love doing this kind of work. It brings me so much joy. And if I can just help any kid or family feel a little bit less anxious about, you know, being sick, because it's inevitable, it's inevitably going to happen. I know I've done my work. So thank you for having me on. Thank you for letting me share the work that I do. I love sharing more. I suppose I can also share the link to my main website, which is Med School for Moms, where you can find all my offerings there and all my free guides as well.
Amazing. Yeah. So good.
Dr. Lana, thank you so much. I love everything. I love your passion and your mission. I love hearing you say you just want to empower people, because that aligns so much with mm-hmm. what we want to do. We want to empower people to feel like they have independence and confidence in the decisions they make about their health. And it's so aligned with us. So we're so happy we were able to have you on. And thank you so much for your time. Thanks so much for sticking around for that interview with Dr. Ilana. Such valuable information. Jen and I could literally just talk to her all day if we had the opportunity to. She was also kind enough to give us a discount code for people who might be interested in joining her membership. So if you use code OPTIMAL at checkout when you're signing up for her membership, you'll get a little extra discount. And she has a workshop coming up on allergies on March 15th. So if you decide to join the membership, make sure you use code OPTIMAL and you will have access to that free workshop for her members only. Thank you for joining us on the Optimal Body Podcast. If you've been listening and enjoying, please consider leaving us a rating and review on your favorite podcasting platform. And of course, we will see you next time.